This is episode 2 of the Empowering C-Sections podcast with Barefoot Mama. In this episode, we will talk to Lori about her 4 C-section experiences, the differences between stitches and staples, narcotic alternatives, and more. So before we dive into Lori's birth story, I just want you guys to pause the video real quick and leave me a 5-star review on anywhere that podcasts are available. And if you haven't already, come join me on Facebook and Instagram at Barefoot Mama Blog.
Remember to check out the postpartum affirmation cards. They were made with C-sections in mind, but then afterwards I realized they are relevant for every postpartum mom. Find them at barefootmama.com/shop. We're just going to dive right in.
Hey, Lori, how are you doing?
Doing well, Kim. How are you doing?
I'm great. So I'm super excited to have you as my first guest on my podcast.
I'm glad to be here.
Do you want to just start by telling us your birth stories?
Well, let's just start with the first birth story. I've got 4 kids and they're all, you know, different. But the first one was my first C-section. So let's start with that one. This is 10 years ago. So I think I went into labor probably around 2 a.m. I started having contractions, but I knew I had my regular doctor's appointment at like 9 o'clock and my contractions weren't really regular. So I was like, I'll just wait till I go see the doctor. So when I went into my doctor's appointment, I was 5 centimeters dilated already.
Wow, that's really cool.
9 a.m. So she's like, yeah, just go check yourself into the hospital because, you know, she's connected to the hospital. So I went and checked in, and at that point, I was dilated to a 6, and that was around 10 a.m. By 11 a.m., I had dilated to a 7, so things were looking great. Everything was going well, and then I just stayed at a 7 for a long time. I exercised on the ball. I got in the whirlpool. I just, you know, watched some movies, played card games with my husband. Nothing was happening. So by, it was around 7 p.m. So, you know, we're talking like 8 hours later. I've been stuck at a 7 for a while. And my doctor...
Was the baby moving? Nothing? Like,
yeah,
baby
was fine.
Well, was baby like descending or was she just staying?
Yeah. I mean, like I wasn't dilating. She was pretty low down. Like I could feel her down there pretty well. And so my doctor recommended by like 7 p.m. maybe starting Pitocin to just maybe get the contractions a little more regular and see if it could help dilate me. And I say recommended because she was really great about letting me do it the way that I wanted to do it. And I think that's important in a care provider. So I agreed with her suggestion. So I went on Pitocin.
And that's did you originally want like an unmedicated birth?
I did want an unmedicated birth. I wanted to try to do it, you know, pretty natural. I think a lot of us want to go that way. And my pain was pretty tolerable, I feel like. So I was okay with it. But then when the Pitocin started, the pain really started to get intense. Mm-hmm. And I was in tears and crying for about an hour. And I had a great nurse and she was there with me, taking good care of me. And she said, you know, you're still just as good of a mother if you get an epidural as if you don't. And I think that was the words that I needed, that, you know, I wasn't less of a human being.
Yeah, definitely.
I decided to get an epidural. And so I went ahead and asked for an epidural. And my doctor said I wasn't going to say anything, but I think it would be a good idea because it might help you relax. And then maybe your body will dilate when it's relaxed. Yeah, and again, my care provider didn't suggest it. She waited until I wanted it.
That's
so
great.
And it takes those anesthesiologists like a long time to get to you, and so the anesthesiologist came, I got the epidural, and I started to relax, and about 15 minutes later it all just went downhill. So they had finally put in like the monitor on the baby's head.
Like the screw that they
screw
like,
in. Mm-hmm. And her heart rate at that point just plummeted and went off the charts. And if you've ever seen anybody come rushing into an emergency room, that is exactly what happened. I had doctors and nurses and all these people running in.
Wow.
And checking to see why her heart rate just dropped off the monitors, and I was bleeding. And so they knew it was placental abruption at that point. And everything happened really fast. So somebody handed my husband a pair of scrubs to put on to meet us in the operating room. I had someone else like shaving me and applying iodine, and I, you know, it was kind of all happening really fast as someone, like my hospital bed was being wheeled down the hall, and the anesthesiologist showed up. He was like cranking up my meds. Like, it's all kind of happened really fast. So they got me down to the operating room and they cut me open fast, and they got her out, I would say, in like 5 to 6 minutes. I mean, it was pretty intense. And, you know, looking back, I panicked. I started to cry. I think for me at that point, my fear wasn't for me or for having the labor that I wanted. My fear was for my child.
Yeah.
That this human being that I had dreamed of and wanted so bad that there was a possibility she was dying. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty traumatic, I would say, at that moment. And then when she came out, the cord was wrapped around her foot and she didn't really cry for a second. And then when she finally did, it was just a weak little cry. And I think that was the relief that I needed for my C-section. So yeah, so that was my first, and it was an emergency, and she's fine. She's 10 years old. She's a smart little girl. Everything's fine.
So she didn't have any, you know, lack of oxygen to her brain at all, or no?
She had, there was enough placenta still attached that she was okay.
Wow, that's great.
But she turned out fine. But it is risky and scary, and anything that anybody dreams or plans of or hopes happens to them. So.
Nope. Well, I'm so glad she's fine.
She's fine. And then I had, the recovery was long and not what anyone expects it to be.
Yeah. And this time you got stitches the first time, correct?
First time I had stitches, subcutaneous stitches. And so they're under the skin. So there's just a little spot where the stitches come out, so that at the end of your hospital stay, they pull the thread out through that little opening.
So you had it, 4 or 5 days, or how long were you in the hospital?
I ended up staying 5 days with her. 5 days, 4 nights,
mm-hmm.
I think is how that works out.
Post C-section, like not in labor or anything. This is just after your C-section. Yeah.
Yes, because she was born. She ended up being born like 9 p.m. and so they let me have an extra day.
Okay.
Because it was just late at night and all of that. So.
And so, how about your second? So you tried for a VBAC.
So my second one. So the plan was for a VBAC, things were fine until we had the intensive ultrasound. They do it 20 weeks. And we found out she had a cyst in her lung in the lobe right next to her heart. And so at that point, we were referred to some perinatologists, and we did every other week and up until the end. And then it was every week we would see the perinatologist to see how the cyst was growing and how close it was to her heart, because it can be pretty risky. So it was determined that she was going to need a higher level NICU than the hospital I planned to deliver at had available. And so we needed to deliver her at a different hospital. And my doctor, my OB, had rights and privileges to deliver me at that hospital, but it is quite a distance away. It's about 15 to 20 minutes away from her office and from her regular hospital where she delivers. So she gave us the choice. She said, I can deliver you up at that other hospital, but you won't be able to try for a VBAC because I can't be there to monitor in case there's tearing or something else goes awry. Or you can find a different care provider up at that other hospital that could do a VBAC for you and be willing to let you do that. And we talked about it as a couple and decided that because we needed this particular NICU staff and pediatric surgeon on hand, and I was comfortable with my care provider, that we decided we would do a planned C-section just to have everybody there at the time we needed them there. And so we went ahead and did a planned C-section the second time around. And this is where it gets interesting. Same provider, right? But at this other hospital, they didn't provide the needles and suturing that she needed to do the subcutaneous stitching, which we didn't realize until we were up there and everybody was pretty much ready to go. And so she ended up giving me staples instead.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, had she never done a cesarean at the Overland Park?
I don't think she does them very often up there. Like I said, she has rights, but she just, I think almost all of her patients deliver at the hospital that's connected to her. So,
That's so crazy.
The nurses didn't let her know. She had requested certain materials be there in advance. And I don't think they looked at the paperwork or the request until we got there.
Oh, wow.
Because she was like, what do you mean? You don't have
That's ridiculous.
And so at that point, rather than waiting, everybody wait while she drive back and pick up her supplies and come back, we just went ahead and did staples. I think if I had known maybe how different it would have been, maybe I would have made everyone wait, but we had the anesthesiologist staff, the NICU staff, pediatric surgeon. I mean, we had all of these people there waiting, so it is what it is. So we ended up with staples.
So for anyone listening, I think if it's a planned C-section, just pause and be like, nope, we need to go get the stitches because it's worth it.
It is worth it. And here's why, for your listeners, is that my third child, I went ahead and had another planned C-section. I did not even attempt to VBAC. I decided that it's okay. I'm okay with C-sections. I've handled them and I can do it. And it was going to be okay. So same care provider, back to hospital number one, right next to her office. And I actually went into labor early, so he didn't wait till his planned date. He came 3 weeks early.
Wow.
Because babies do that. They like to surprise us. He's actually my April Fool's Day baby. So it was the best April Fool's Day joke I ever got. So she went in. She went in to do the C-section number three. There was so much scarring from the staples that she ended up having to remove a large section of scar tissue, basically part of my uterus, to compensate for it so that should I choose to have another child in the future, that there would be less complications that come with the additional scar tissue. I probably would have made her wait on number two and go out and got the needle and sutures, but hindsight's all 2020.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Well, and so let's talk, what kind of complications can arise from scar tissue, like too much scar tissue? Did she talk to you about, things that could happen?
She briefly mentioned a few things in passing, but she spit out names that I was like, I don't know what she's talking about. So later, I went and looked some stuff up when we talked about having a fourth. So there's placenta accreta, which is where the baby can implant into the scar tissue, or the placenta can grow through the scar tissue or into it. And that causes, when that happens, like you can end up losing your uterus. If it ends up growing outside, you can lose other organs. It's pretty risky stuff. Placenta previa, the more C-sections you have, the more risk you have of placenta previa, where the placenta covers the cervix.
And did you struggled with that with the fourth, right? Or
my third and fourth mm-hmm. had placenta previa at 20 weeks when they do that ultrasound. And then they just continue to monitor it, because a lot of times as your uterus expands, your placenta, where it's attached as the uterus grows, will kind of move with the uterus growing and move away from your cervix. In both of my cases, it did that. So it wasn't covering my cervix. at the end at 40 weeks. That's but good. It is a risk that comes with additional C-sections.
And another risk is like cesarean ectopic pregnancies, which we will have a guest in the future episode talking about her experience having two cesarean ectopic pregnancies. And that's where the embryo just immediately implants in the scar. And so the baby's pretty much just growing inside of your scar, and it's going to split you open. And so it's like a guaranteed you have to abort the baby. So that is going to be in a future episode, but another risk, you know, and why your OB decided to remove all of that scar tissue, because we don't want that to happen for a baby to implant in your scar tissue.
Right. Glad she knew what she was doing and what to look for.
Yeah. And do you know, I don't know, I wonder why OBs even staple. Like, I was listening to a meeting, and ACOG had a meeting, and someone was saying in that meeting that, or he gave a speech or something, saying that obstetricians should not be using staples in any C-section unless there's hemorrhaging, you know, of the mother, and the mother's like losing way too much blood way too fast. And that should be the only time that staples are used, because staples just cause so much more, like, physical, not deformities, but the scar is bigger, the scar is thicker and more discolored and disfigured, and then it causes a lot more issues with the uterus healing and just healing in general, and then staples can pop off more often than stitches do, and just all this crazy stuff.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. My second incision, when it healed, I definitely had a bigger external scar that you could see. Like, it was really fat compared to my initial one, which was a very thin line, hardly noticeable. And same with my third and fourth, again, hardly noticeable. And even internally, I could feel internally that there was more scar tissue in there, that it was harder. It was just bigger. Like, I could feel it even.
And it's like a border, like an inch. Because with my first, I had staples. Yeah. And it was like 2 or 3 inches of just like surrounding my scar. And I would always say my scar doesn't hurt. It's all the area around it, or my area around it is numb and painful, and it gets swollen and itchy. But then after my second, oh my gosh, because that one I got stitches. And it was such a difference. It was night and day. I felt so much better after 3 months of my stitches than I did after 12 months with my staples. Like, it was crazy. And the scarring was way so much more reduced, and just, I don't know, totally different.
Yeah, long-term healing, definitely over the long-term, stitches are the way to go. I think it's unfortunate that we don't even think to ask our providers. Especially with your first, because you're typically not planning for a C-section unless you end up with a breech baby or something like that. But even then, you don't worry about that until the last, you know, few weeks mm-hmm. of pregnancy, when you're checking the baby and seeing if they're flipped or whatnot. And it's not an initial question we ask our providers usually, like, what kind of C-section would you give me if I happen to have one?
Yep. Or what closures would you use for my incision? Like,
Yeah, I happened to hear from a friend when I was pregnant with my first that my doctor did this particular stitch. But I was like, oh, that's nice to know. But in the back of my head, I'm like, that's not happening to me. I'm not going to have a C-section. So
that's exactly.
But it actually did end up mattering. And I'm grateful that I was lucky enough to have that provider. So.
Yep, that's awesome. You are so lucky. I'm so glad you told me about this stitch, because then when I moved and was getting a new provider, I looked for a doctor who only did stitches. And apparently in Utah, they only do stitches. So in the Utah Valley area, yeah, all the OBs I've talked to and all the midwives, they're like, oh, everyone in the Valley does, you know, they double suture the uterus and they only use stitches. And I was like, what the heck, Kansas? Why did I get stitches? I mean, staples. Yeah.
I'm curious to know about other states as well, but I guess I won't need to know unless I have another baby. But
yeah. So you said you experienced some trauma from your first, it being an emergency C-section. So did you experience any like guilt or shame or negativity for needing a C-section? Or have you heard from others like, oh, you took the lazy way out?
Or did you ever did you ever experience any of that, I don't know, backlash or
Yeah, actually I did. I had a friend who had told me that I would not be able to bond with my baby as well as another mother that had given vaginal birth because it was a baby by C-section. And because I didn't get that rush of endorphins and hormones, and the baby couldn't immediately lay on my chest and things like that, that I would never be able to bond with my baby the same that someone else can. And my baby at this point, I think was a couple of weeks old. And I was so flabbergasted that she would even say this.
Yeah.
I didn't even know how to respond. And I sat there speechless, I think, for a few minutes. And then finally I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I love this baby more than my whole self. And I can't imagine being any less in love with her than I am. Like, there's just,
oh, that's great.
I couldn't even fathom it, because I felt like I had bonded with my baby in a way that only a mother could.
Yeah. And even your planned ones too. Cause then some people say when you're in labor, then your body at least knows it's going to give birth to a baby. But then if you plan the C-section before you're in labor, then that's when you're not going to bond with your babies. So did you feel like your planned C-sections were any less bonding?
I think that is still a ridiculous notion. I bonded with my second baby just as well as my first and my third and my fourth. Yeah. And I think that's a very false notion that people tried to give me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody said I wimped out, because anytime you have a major surgery like that, there is nothing wimpy about it at all. In fact, I think you're stronger for it, because not only are you in the same boat as everyone else having to care for a newborn baby that needs tons of love and attention and caring for, but you're also trying to recover from a very major and extensive surgery that is pretty gruesome. I mean, I've had friends complaining about the pain from gallbladder or appendectomy or things like that. And I'm always like, yes, and that was laparoscopic. Imagine having the whole belly. Imagine how my abs felt after that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. So I don't think I got much flack as far as that goes. I think there's always mental trauma, and I think it can take a variety of forms based on the labor and the person. For me, I was initially sad that it hadn't gone the way I had expected it to go. I wanted to have that natural vaginal birth and ended up not. I think for me, because of the scenario, it was life or death. Literally, that gave me comfort that I chose life.
Mm-hmm.
And life will always win out for me, for life, my life and her life, because of a C-section, and otherwise we'd both be dead. And so there wasn't as much guilt as I think maybe some people have had.
Yeah.
That maybe just couldn't dilate and just couldn't get there and ended up having a C-section, feeling like they failed. I didn't feel like I failed.
Yeah.
In that respect. But I know people that have felt that kind of trauma.
Yeah.
C-section.
So who would you say was your biggest support during your recovery? And like, what helped you the most?
Definitely my husband. Because he's super sweet, really great about helping me to get stuff, or even telling me not to push myself. He'll be like,
that's so important.
It's hard. I know it's hard for you to get up and do things. Don't feel like you have to get up and do them. My mom came out for all of them and was a good help with especially other kids and all of that. So good supportive family makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's great. And then how did the C-section recovery go for you? So we kind of talked about, you know, the stitches versus the staples, but the first time around, because then some people say the first one's the worst, but then the ones after that are better. But even, you know, what did you feel like your second one was better or?
Okay, here's what I think. And this is my opinion, because I think there's a lot of factors that play into your recovery. I feel like the ones where I went into labor or a little bit harder recovery, I think just the expanding and contracting of your uterus and the wearing out of those muscles before like the C-section and the incision doesn't help, plus all the extra hormones your body is pumping through. So I feel like my planned C-section, in some ways I bounced back a little bit faster because I think my body wasn't as tired.
Interesting. So sense? Yeah. How long were you in labor with your third then?
Or? I was in denial. So I probably was in labor probably about 6 hours before he was born, but I tried to rest and take it easy and, try to just, cause I thought maybe they were just Braxton Hicks initially.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point I thought, oh, maybe I better get an app and start timing these contractions. Oh, cause he was so early cause he was 3 weeks early. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't mentally ready.
And did you dilate at all? Like, did they even check you or?
No, when I got to the hospital, they gave me meds to slow down my contractions because I'd already had a planned C-section. So they just started doing what they could to prepare me for the C-section. He was definitely wedged down in my birth canal.
Oh, wow.
Because when they went to deliver him from the C-section, she had to kind of shove him back up the other direction.
Oh my gosh.
In some ways, I'm like, maybe I should have shot for a VBAC.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. And so, wow, that's so interesting. I never thought, because I've always thought like maybe I want to go into labor so then I know my baby's ready and I'm not taking them out too early. But it's interesting that you say that the ones that you didn't go into labor, you had a better recovery with those.
Yeah, it depends. Like I said, there's a lot of factors that play into it. I mean, how much sleep did you get? I mean, my third was born in the middle of the day too. My fourth came in the middle of the night. So your body hasn't gotten all the rest that it needs. And
so did you go into labor with your fourth as well?
Yes, my kids like to come early.
Oh my gosh.
So, but I didn't labor long once I knew. I woke up and I knew I was in labor, so.
Oh, you had medication complications. How?
Yes, C-section medication. Let's talk about that for a second. So typically, I mean, I would check with your doctor. I think every doctor might have their different meds that they like to give you. So Percocet or oxycodone is the one that they'll typically administer after a C-section for pain. I found that the narcotics and the meds that were in it made me hallucinate, made me kind of loopy. I didn't like the way that it was making me feel, even if it took the pain away. So I asked for something else. So they gave me what's called Loratab or hydrocodone. And that also made me a little bit loopy, but not nearly as bad. And so I have asked for that on all of my next C-sections after my first, because I felt like it affected me less. And even then I would try to get away with maybe taking a half of a tablet instead of a whole one. But it depends on where your pain threshold's at and what you can handle. Again, know your body and know your limits. If you need to take a whole one, take a whole one. I knew that I could get away with a half. And so I did.
And you never tried just like Tylenol or just ibuprofen?
I did when I got home from the hospital. As soon as I knew that Tylenol and ibuprofen would be more effective than would be just as effective as the Loratab, I'd switch over.
Oh, so you didn't have both at the same time?
No.
Because they'd have me on Percocet and Motrin, and then I'd have to like...
Yeah, I try. For me, I don't like taking a lot of pain meds, so I try to get away with minimum amount of dosage. I also apparently have a high threshold for pain.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And so for me, I could get away with pretty much when I got home from the hospital, sticking with Tylenol.
Wow, that's crazy.
But I, like I said, that's not for everyone. And I don't expect everyone's experience to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're finding that the pain meds are affecting you, ask for something different. Ask what your other options are. Talk to your provider. I mean, don't be afraid to be like, this isn't working for me. There's a lot they can do. Even my IV was hurting a lot in the hospital. And I said, do I have to have this? And they said, well, no. And I said, all right, take it out.
So.
That's great.
I was the whole time in the hospital without an IV and it was fine.
Nice. It's like with the catheter. The first time I just expected them to take it out whenever it needed to be taken out. But then they told me, oh, as soon as you can get up and walk, that means you can go to the bathroom. So that means we can take it out. And I was like, I've been able to walk since day one. Like, what the heck? And so with my second, I was like, get this catheter out right now. Like 2 hours after surgery, I'm like, I can move my legs. I'm walking.
I can feel my legs.
Yeah. I'm walking to the bathroom.
Yeah. And that really depends on how your epidural or your spinal block, I mean, whatever you ended up having, how it goes. I have had some fantastic spinal blocks that have, you know, worn off and I can get up and walk. And I have had a couple where, like, I had a leg that just was still numb for
really
hours. Wow. And I, you know, I'm a petite figure. This is for your listeners. Pregnancy weight is about 110. So I'm pretty, pretty tiny. So I think that's also why medication affects me a lot.
Yeah.
That I just have a small body. So a little bit goes a long ways.
Yep, definitely. That.
So yeah, they've had to strap down my arms just because I do shake, but.
So you're like shaking, not just shivering. Cause like I would shiver, but I wouldn't really shake.
Oh, it's like full on body shake.
Oh man, gosh. That's awful. You poor thing.
I think it probably freaked my husband out more than me even. He's like, what is happening to your body right now?
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I can't control it. So.
Yeah. And how soon after your babies were born, did they put them on your chest?
The last two, my third and my fourth, they did it in the operating room. Actually, they brought the baby over and laid them on my chest while I was still being sewn back up. I also knew to request that. I think the first one, because of the emergency, they needed to go do a bunch of tests and make sure she was breathing and different things like that. That was more important than her life was more important than making sure she had mommy time on my tummy.
Definitely.
And my second one, the NICU staff needed to check her out ASAP when she was born. And she had really low blood sugar. And so they had to give her like a bottle in the operating room and some other things like that. So yeah. They brought her over as soon as they could. They gave me a flash of her and then took care of her and then brought her back over to snuggle later. But yeah, again, I mean, there's other factors that come into play, but if there's not an emergency type situation, they can do it in the operating room. I don't see why not, but yeah. I would talk to your care provider and make sure it's on your birthing plan list. Make sure they know that's what you want.
Yeah. So you said you had like, I don't know if we talked enough about like the physical trauma of worrying, like freaking out about your baby almost dying. So maybe like, did you have to overcome it or did you feel like once she came, you kind of just got over it? Or did you?
I think really I had to recover somewhat physically. Like I said, my body was shaking. I was throwing up. I had, back in the recovery room, I had a lot of things going on. That was all very traumatic as far as like trying to get my mind and my body back into a place where I could focus and really process what had just happened because it happened so fast too.
Mm-hmm.
I was just trying to put myself back together.
Yeah.
And then I think once like my body recovered from the meds that were in it and stopped shaking and vomiting and then I could be calmed down. I think once I got to like really hold her and snuggle her and see her, I think that really helped overcome a lot of the trauma that was initially involved. And I think mine was more of an initial trauma.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't like PTSD so much.
It wasn't PTSD so much. It was just once I finally recovered enough and calmed down, I was okay.
Okay.
And then I didn't experience, I would say, long-term trauma from the C-section, whereas I think it may be the reverse for others.
Mm-hmm.
It's the after recovery process that maybe causes more trauma.
Yeah.
That's the initial process.
Yeah. That's interesting that like, that's true. Sometimes the surgery is what causes the trauma. Sometimes it's the recovery that causes the trauma and awfulness.
Yeah. And I think that's why the whole thing's so unique to each situation and each individual and each experience that people have. So there's no way to tell who's going to be traumatized by what.
I know. Well, and did you feel respected by, you know, your care providers and by the nursing team? And did you feel like you had a voice and your voice was never really taken away? Like, even in an emergency situation where it's kind of just, they don't ask you like, hey, is it okay if we give you a C-section? It's like, you need this right now. So
I had a voice up until my baby's heart rate dropped and I was bleeding. And then it was, I did not have a voice, but it didn't matter because I would have chosen a C-section.
Yeah. Well, and you trusted your provider. Yeah.
You know, I trusted my provider at that point that she knew what was happening and that she knew that that is what needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say all the subsequent ones, I feel like I pretty much had a voice as far as what was happening, what was going on. I think too, as I've gotten older, you're just braver about stuff. You feel more knowledgeable as far as, I want this medication, I want this. Once you've gone through it too, I wish I'd have been maybe more knowledgeable before my first. I was lucky in some respects in that in my birthing class, you spend this whole class learning how to breathe and different relaxation techniques. And you go through all these things preparing for this beautiful vaginal birth that you expect. And I was lucky in that my teacher at the end, towards the end of class said, okay, we've spent all this time talking about how we want it to go and things to help us, but let's talk about what could happen and what you need to be prepared for. And so she walked through different traumatic ordeals, such as, you know, if the baby breathes in meconium, or if your baby has the cord wrapped around their neck when they're born. So she talked about all these horrible things. And then she made us watch a C-section video on what they do for a C-section and what to expect if you have a C-section. And part of me was like, why is she making us watch this? We're at a birthing class. But she was right in that statistically speaking, someone in that room would have that experience and needed to know what they were, what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and you know, of course that was me.
Yeah.
And so when I went into the C-section room, I knew a lot of the steps that were going to happen and a lot of the process already. And so I That's think great. That helped as well. Whereas I think if you knew nothing about a C-section at all, that you would be more traumatized by the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm grateful that in a birthing class where we were learning to have the best vaginal birth possible, we also discussed the worst case scenarios. Like prepare, right? What do they say? Hope for the best, but prepare for the worst.
Prepare for the worst, yep. What is your best advice for other C-section moms?
There's like all these advice in my head. So one of the things, I know it's hard and it's painful to get up and walk, especially those first few days. But I felt like it really helped the healing process. Definitely. To get up and do it.
Yeah.
You gotta like struggle through it a little bit. Then I think with my third, I took it too far because I was like, okay, I got to get up and walk because I know it helps and I know it's going to help my healing go faster. Yeah. And so I got the baby and I was like, I'm going to walk all the way to the end of the hall and turn around and come all the way back. And I got to the end of the hall and I was in tears because I tried to push it too far.
Oh man.
So I would say do it, but don't push yourself too much. Like learn your limits, I guess would be my advice. Learn what you can and can't do. And, you know, if it hurts too much, stop. But also know that walking, helps. Massaging your scar and your belly a little bit, also hurts, also helps.
yeah.
I mean, I guess that would be my advice, is that sometimes a little pain helps the healing process. Long-term, I know they say like, oh, at 8 weeks, you can go back to your normal health.
No, they said 6 weeks.
Know your body.
They said 6 weeks, you can go back to normal exercise.
I mean, know your body. You know if you can do it. Because, you know, after my planned C-section, by 8 weeks, I did feel pretty good as far as like walking and doing some exercise. My next one, no, it was at least 3 months. Mm-hmm. I just knew that I wasn't quite healed enough. My fourth one, I made the terrible mistake of trying to sit up on my own at about 5 weeks after delivery. And I ended up ripping my incision a little bit.
Ouch.
It was an accident. I just tried to put on some pants and just tried to sit back up and just forgot that maybe for a second I forgot. I didn't quite have the abs that I used to have.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm.
So I re-injured it, and then it was a longer healing process. So I would say take it easy and know when you're ready to go back and when you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it may take longer on even some pregnancies than others. So
yeah, every baby's different and time of your life.
Every recovery is different. As I've gotten older, I think labor and delivery's gotten harder too. So there's that. I'm in my mid to late 30s.
Yeah, that would definitely play a part. Well, I think that is all the questions. Thank you so much for being on this podcast with me and for being my first interview. And thank you for sharing all your nuggets of wisdom. It's been so fun to talk to you about this. I'm sure your experience will help a lot of women.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate being able to share and hope that it helps some other women out there in making decisions and being informed and knowing what to expect.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 2 of the Empowering C-Sections podcast. We learned a lot about her experience with her 4 C-sections, the differences between stitches and staples, and narcotic alternatives, and then taking it easy during recovery and knowing yourself and knowing your body and not pushing your limits. Don't forget to follow the channel and subscribe to my email list. Join me next time for more information about stitches and why they are hands down preferred over staples.